Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Welcome along to La Liga Weekly, coming to you on Transfer Deadline Day. How exciting. Will Barca fans play emotional farewells to Emerson Royal and Iyakhsh Mariba after their sterling service to the club over so many years? Apparently, they may have room to sign yet another unwanted striker to go with Brathwaite and Aguero. Actually, let me check. Oh, no, they've missed out on Troy Deeney. Oh, well, never mind. Will PSG regret not saying yes to Real Madrid's €180 million offer for a player who'll be on a free transfer next summer? I mean, free does seem like decent value. And the angry tears of injustice that PSG will inevitably shed will be worth the whole saga. It looks like Madrid will have spent some of their Mbappe war chest on a hugely talented youngster who plays in an area of the squad in which they're thin, which seems almost sensible. Our sources are reporting that there will be a final Mbappe bid and that there won't be a final Mbappe bid, that Pjanic is both staying in Spain and heading to Italy, and that Koundé is signing for Chelsea and Sevilla have rejected all bids. Our sources are basically everybody else. Thankfully, there has been some football, some fighting, some handballs, and on Sunday, at least, the occasional goal. Aissa Mandi's dramatic 95th-minute own goal left Atletico Madrid unbeaten, one of six, count them, six, teams sharing the leadership of La Liga on 7 points. It also left the pitch at the Metropolitano looking like the scene of a battle, yellow-shirted bodies strewn everywhere and blood flowing freely in the tunnel. Barca, Real Madrid also won, as did Valencia and Mallorca. And Rayo Vallecano scored four goals, which is also the number of fans who are inside the stadium to watch the game. We need Terry Gibson to explain some of this La Liga madness to us. So, Terry, we've got all of the games to go through, but let's have a quick look at the transfer stuff, shall we? So the warning on this is that we are recording. The deadline day is not done. So anything could happen, yes. So where do you want to start? Mbappe, we talked about this with the Patreons. Oh, patreon.com/LTEL if you want to join in. We have secret chats with our Patreons, such as the one that we had the other day about Mbappe, which you and I were both saying, don't sign Mbappe. Not yet, yeah. Anyway, because yeah. It'll cost you €180 million. And if you wait, you get him for free, and you can do stuff like sign other players in areas of the squad that you need, such as Eduardo Camavinga. who is born in an Angolan refugee camp, Terry. That's a bit of background to Camavinga. Hugely highly rated young central midfield player, which when you look at the profile of their squad, seems like a sensible use of some money for Real Madrid.
It does. And I think that the issue then is going to be that the players, I mean, it's going to be late and there's going to be players left at Real Madrid that are not going to be needed if he comes in. So I think we've seen a return to form for Isco, who seems to be in Ancelotti's good books, which is a bonus for him. But that will change if Camavinga does come into Real Madrid. Then there are other players like Dani Ceballos, who's been on loan back at Real Madrid. That's an issue for him as well. So, but it is an area of the pitch where they do need cover for the two, I think Modric, we can call a veteran, and Toni Kroos, who do tend to play a lot of football during the season. So it's it makes sense. The Mbappe deal makes sense as well. And I think that the fact that they're going to bring in a young midfield player is somewhere where they've been crying out for. So it's because they've got numbers in midfield, but not ones they've called upon on a regular basis over the last couple of years. So if they're going to spend money on a potentially promising young midfield player, then, you know, it does seem a wise investment.
Yes.
As long as he plays. We've probably said the same about Luka Jovic and one or two others in recent seasons, as long as he plays and as long as he's treated as an important member of the squad.
Yes, very good on Football Manager. That's the detailed scouting report I can give you on Camavinga. He's one of the highly rated midfielders. It makes perfect sense for them to go and get him, given the age of Luka Modric. Kroos isn't as old. We lump Kroos in with Modric, don't we? Which is a bit insulting for Kroos. He's quite a bit younger. Wonderful.
And he
still
plays 60 games a year, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Toni Kroos.
Yeah.
Plays, and if there was an injury or two last year, that they were down to three midfielders, so they did need addressing. And Toni Kroos has retired from international football, so it suggests that he believes that he's been pushing himself too much in the last couple of years for club and country.
Yeah. And Mbappe, just to recap for the podcast listeners, basically Mbappe, terrific player, everything going for him, but it was simply the fact that they can get him for free in a short period, relatively short period of time, that says, wait.
Exactly. We're recording this. It still wouldn't surprise me it happens, because that's the nature of transfer deadline day. But it's common sense. And the 180 million euros, it's a lot of money. I know Real Madrid isn't privately owned and someone can, they're a wealthy consortium or wealthy individual can just, you pay that money and not have a second's thought, which is happening at other clubs. It is still a lot of money from a business point of view. It's bloody obvious, to be honest. we're not talking about a player who's 28, 29, whose resale value is going to be less. That becomes an issue if you spend, 180 million. We're talking about a 22-year-old and they've got time. It's for Mbappe, I think it makes sense as well to have a season playing for PSG, to try again to win the Champions League, to play alongside Messi and to play alongside Neymar. That will be interesting, though, if he does stay, whether, how they're going to see it, particularly in the second half of the season. How's his attitude going to be, knowing that he's probably at that stage already done a deal with Real Madrid? I think Real Madrid have to be super confident that he wants to go there next season. That's the issue, isn't it? They were concerned that if they didn't get him now, someone from the Premier League, another club throughout Europe could make him an offer and he might choose to go elsewhere. But I think they must be convinced that he wants to go to Real Madrid and be content with the fact that they'll wait till January, do a pre-contract then.
Yeah, yeah. Although they did bid 180 million, PSG could have accepted it. And had 180 million euros of Real Madrid's money. Because that's the thing, isn't it? It's not just that it comes out of Real Madrid's bank account. It goes into PSG's bank account, which, as Florentino tells us, is one of the sources of football being broken. That they were going to have to be the Super League for that reason.
And the fact PSG can turn down that money.
Yeah.
It just goes to show the difference between, clubs around Europe, those that have extraordinary amounts of wealth, where 180 million... it makes no difference to them.
Yeah.
And they're keeping Mbappe, plus his wages as well for another year. I can only guess, 30 million on top of the 180 million. So it would save them. It would easily have saved them 200 million euros.
Yes.
For the next year. But the fact that business can take that hit, take that loss, just goes to show how much money PSG do have.
So Real Madrid won a game. Let's do them. It wasn't the most exciting of games, but they won it, didn't they? With a goal from a right back, Terry. That's embarrassing, isn't it?
It was a well deserved win. A easier game than I thought it was going to be, because I'll come to Betis in a minute. But Real Madrid were strong defensively. They suffered in the first half in the midfield department. I thought Betis had the edge there. But the attacking players, big decision from Ancelotti to play Vinny Jr. I'm not sure where we're at with that name at the moment. But he played, the decision proved to be correct. He played well. Benzema was good. Gareth Bale, while he was on, was influential as well. And that was the difference between the two teams, I think, the front three. And it's no surprise when you compare the Real Madrid front three to the front three of Betis, which was Juanmi, Fekir, and Aitor Ruibal. They didn't really make much headway. Surprised that Borja Iglesias didn't start. I think they needed a focal point of the attack, Betis. And I have to say, I think Betis have been poor so far. I don't see them. I see them as one of the teams this season that has gone backwards because of their transfer window. And there's not too many other teams. Betis are the ones that stand out for me where they're not as good as last season in certain areas, certain positions. So I think that's why, hence, I think it was a reasonably comfortable win for Real Madrid. Possibly should have been by more, but a tough place to go and play. And Carvajal with a decent finish. They're great on the counter-attack. They just had more threat going in behind. And that comes from Vinny, of course, from Gareth Bale. And as we've seen, already explained, Carvajal pushing on from the right-back position on a counter-attack and finishing off with a lovely volley at the far post.
Yeah. It makes sense if Betis are short of cash, wouldn't it? As one of the better-supported clubs. In La Liga, it's always lagged behind its level of support, hasn't it? In an extraordinary kind of way, they've never had the money that reflects the fact that they've got this huge stadium that they are reasonably close to filling. So it would make sense for them to have struggled, wouldn't it, over the last 18 months, and for the coffers to be fairly low. I guess that's the case, is it?
But I assumed this was going to be the case for the majority of clubs in Europe.
Yeah.
But it's not. I mean, God forbid what would have happened in this transfer window if we hadn't have had a pandemic where supporters haven't been in the stadium for 18 months. Because when you look around the I say the rest of Europe, the Premier League,
it's had no
effect on the transfer window. It's a normal extraordinary transfer window for Premier League clubs.
Yeah.
But clubs for other clubs, as you say, Betis, that rely on 40,000, 50 up to 60,000 supporters in their home stadium, haven't had that, and they're suffering. You know, they've let players go, they've sold players. The replacements don't look as good as the ones that the players they've sold. And they are a perfect example of a club that perhaps the purse strings are tight because of the current situation. So I don't want to be too critical, Betis, but I just looking at it from a football point of view, they're the one team this season I look at, and I think they don't look as good as last season.
Extraordinary game, extraordinary finish, particularly in the Atletico Villarreal game. So Atletico dropped their first points of the season, but Villarreal were a whisker away from a victory. Somehow they managed to be in front twice, Villarreal. Trigueros, Luis Suarez then equalise, Arnaud Danjuma put Villarreal in front. And then in the 95th minute of the game, Terry, I'm sure most of the hardcore will have seen this now, but for the people who haven't caught up with it, right, what on earth? Talk us through the 95th minute of that game.
Well, it's an extraordinary game because Atletico had 23 shots, 15 shots on target. Villarreal had 2 shots, both on target, and were both goals.
Yeah,
and every time Villarreal took the lead, you think, has that happened? The first time you're thinking, how has that happened? The second one you're thinking, it's happened again. So they're both good finishes, both good goals. Defensive error on the second one for Atletico was Savic and Jimenez. A little bit of a misunderstanding, and Villarreal steal the ball away quickly, and then Danjuma finishes off really nicely. Trigueros with a good strike, and they had two shots. They had no corners. I think it was 15 corners to nil to Atletico Madrid. Atletico looked like a team that was so wound up, so tight, that for the first 30 minutes, I was watching them thinking, they're blowing Villarreal away. They are clearly the best team in La Liga. The style of play, the individual players. But when they get to the final third of the pitch, it's like scoring a goal seems to be the hardest thing in the world. And they're so wound up so tight by Simeone. That pace in the early 30 minutes at the start of the game was relentless. They just need to slow down and pick that final pass better in the final third. It wasn't that they were missing chances. It was like everything is rushed. When I say everything, it's everything is rushed. And when they get into the final third, instead of just showing that composure, they're so anxious. So I think that needs to calm down a bit. But it was an excellent performance from Atletico. Really was. So they deserve something from the game. But both goals were defensive mistakes. Villarreal, for the first goal, had a throw-in deep in their own defensive half of the pitch. They lose the ball before you know it. Correa's sliding it back for Suarez, who has that composure. To him, it's not the hardest thing in the world to score a goal, and he finished it off really nicely. But the 95th minute, I think it's Rodrigo de Paul, isn't it, who clips the hopeful ball forward. Desperation. It's not going anywhere near an Atletico Madrid player. It's a poor pass. and Isamendi, and I think there's another player on the cover. It's a diagonal pass, which is going to bounce through.
I think it's Saul. Yeah.
So it's a diagonal pass, trying to explain it to everyone that hasn't seen it, that's going to bounce and probably reach the penalty area under no pressure from an Atletico Madrid player. It's one of those where the players are throwing their arms up in the air thinking, what are you doing? What sort of pass is that? There's no one there. And Geronimo Rulli comes tearing out of his goal at a weird angle. He's following the path of the ball, expecting it to bounce and no one touch it. And Aissa Mandy just assumes that his defender is going to be in the centre of goal on the penalty spot for a calm little soft header back towards him. But of course he's not. Rulli is on the diagonal run and the centre of the goal is completely open. Rulli tries to react, slips, goes down, and the ball just trickles and rolls over the goal line. So it was an extraordinary goal. And you're right, people were lying on the floor all over the place, on the bench, three or four VRL players threw themselves to the ground. They were so close to getting a massive win. But, you know, Atletico easily deserved something from that game.
So are we blaming Geronimo, apparently, Rui, entirely? Or
I do.
We don't know what was said, do we? That's the only thing we don't know what you communicated.
There was no need for him to act so hasty.
Yeah.
There was no need for him to act so hasty. If Aissa Mandy leaves it, it's going to go to the left back. I'm trying to think who the left back was on at the time because they changed them. Probably Pedraza.
Right. Yeah.
It's going in, it's going to bounce past Mandy. It's going to go towards the corner of the penalty area. Pedraza was there. And nobody else.
But that's where Rui's off to, isn't it? He's off to get that ball in the corner of the penalty area, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Mm. And so he could have just stayed in the centre of goal. Mm. And if Mandy doesn't touch it, Pedraza gets it and then either turns and clears it or it goes back to the goalkeeper in the centre of goal. So I don't know why with three of them there, Rulli thought it was a wise idea to charge towards the corner of the penalty area. It was bizarre.
Yep, and then apparently a punch-up in the tunnel afterwards with...
With the celebrations, coaching staff, players, supporters. I always wonder how bad this punch-up was.
Yeah.
You know what they're like.
Fair enough, yeah.
Yeah, a melee, I would probably describe it. It's been a while since we've seen a proper punch-up in the tunnel.
Back in your day, Terry, people had proper punch-ups in the tunnel. Yeah.
Tunnels were smaller. There was no cameras. Someone could distract the referee. That was always a good one. whilst players were going hammer and tongs in a concrete tunnel with no holds barred. I can't imagine it was that stage.
Yes. Right.
That's fun, though, doesn't it? It does add to the fun. Yeah. Two lunatic managers that are giving it their all on the touchline. Very animated. I mean that in the nicest sense. I don't mean they're both the absolute lunatics, but in terms of their characteristics on the bench, you can understand the emotions of Unai Emery thinking he's finally won a game against Simeone. Villarreal finally beating Atletico Madrid at the Wanda, and then that happens, and Simeone tearing off down the tunnel, and it was good fun. It was, for a neutral, a fun game to watch.
Yeah, and La Liga is
Thomas Lemar, by the way.
Oh yeah, go on.
Oh, wow, how good was he particularly in the first half? I mean, the second half, I have to say, was a little bit more even, but in the first half, Atletico ripped Villarreal apart. Albiol and Aissa Mandy deserve all the credit in the world for clinging on with their fingertips to keep that clean sheet. But Thomas Lemar is a player that we much criticised. We did on the podcast for a couple of years, I think, where we didn't see the value in the 70-odd million they paid for him. But he's all-purpose now. His energy levels are incredible. His quality is incredible. And it's astonishing, I think, the turnaround in his personality to the extent that you think he's one of the most important players for Atletico Madrid now.
But it is a thing that I think doesn't happen enough, that football clubs and by extension fans and the media just write people off all the time.
Yes.
And just think, you know, and sometimes guys with obvious quality. He was really good at Monaco and they paid 70 million quid for him, or euros. So, you know, you wonder how many others I just get, oh, no, he's no good, and just we'll move on, we'll get another one in. And it, well, but look, there's an example.
That's the reason I brought this up.
Yeah,
because it's extraordinary. It doesn't happen often. Mm. You know, players do, they take some time to settle. Perhaps a manager, you know, perhaps a manager just simply doesn't think when he turns up, that's not the player I thought we were buying. Mm. And in time, perhaps, you know, the player adapts. In time, perhaps the manager comes round. That's why it's quite unusual, you know, even for Simeone, to normally when he doesn't fancy a player, a year, 18 months, 2 years down the line, they're not playing and they drift off somewhere else. It's but happened so many times, particularly in attacking players for Atletico.
But it's harder now, isn't it? Because I think we've got more of a gap, haven't we, between the clubs with money and the clubs without money.
Yes.
We've got a load of players that Barca and Real Madrid can tell you you just can't get rid of. And so the answer has got to be put them in the team, hasn't it? It's got to be somehow... Oh, Pjanic. So we went to Barcelona, shall we? So they beat Getafe 2-1.
Player.
But yeah, but Pjanic isn't an idiot, is he? You know what I mean? And yet, on Barcelona Twitter, you'd think he was. You'd think, oh, well, there's some kind of dummy who can't play football. But it's and now Koeman apparently, so the Mariba money and the Emerson Royale money, if he goes to Spurs, Koeman wants another striker.
Why?
I don't know.
No, that's the last position. They could perhaps do better than what they've got, but they, in terms of numbers, and the quality is still there. I mean, we're not talking about a Barcelona could go out and buy Haaland. We're not talking that level. So they're going to buy someone else if they do buy another striker that I can't see making a difference and being better than, with the money they've got, better than what they've already got at the moment.
Yeah.
So it's numbers-wise, I mean, we keep forgetting Aguero's a Barcelona player because we haven't seen him yet. And he's kind of gone off the, it doesn't register that Aguero is, we're going to see him hopefully soon. And Ansu Fati and Dembele. You've got three new, you can have a complete new forward line. I don't know if it's going to be better than one that they're using at the moment with Memphis, Braithwaite and Griezmann. But you could have a new, completely new forward line. So there's six there. I'm flabbergasted that they're considering another striker. And there are other positions in the pitch. Well, actually, I don't think there is.
No, I'd leave
not
it.
With the money. With the money they've got, keep the money.
And look at the debt that they've got. a billion euros of debt. Might be an idea to start paying that down at some point. And the young ones,
Koeman uses the young ones. I mean, Nico Gonzalez and Gavi came on at the weekend. So that's what I'm saying. I don't see the need to rush out and spend it. Possibly a right back. I know you said Sergio Roberto. I still think that's a weakness when he plays there. I think he's a very good midfield player. It's a story in itself, isn't it? The first time in 11 seasons he scored more than one goal in a season for Barcelona. He had three goals in 200 appearances before this season started in La Liga. And now he's got two in the first 3 weeks of the season. So we've forgotten that he is actually a very good midfield player.
Yeah.
So my issue then would be if Serginho Des does pick up an injury, then I would probably be going with Oscar Mingueza before using Roberto at right back. But that might be the position if Emerson goes. It might be the one position that
it's not a tragedy, is it? To get you through to January, you're only talking to January, aren't you? So
yes,
you know. So you've got. I like Dest. I think he's very good.
And if you're going to get the money for those, you're probably going to have to spend all of it to get another right back.
Yeah. Yes.
So what is the point?
As yet, they haven't registered Aguero, I believe, have they? Which made sense because he's injured. But
yeah.
So you need some spare money, don't you, to register Aguero? Whether I mean, I wouldn't have signed Aguero in Barcelona circumstances, but they've got him, haven't they? Anyway, it seems madness. Memphis Depay, very popular, good player, isn't he? A different, I think we said this last week, but you know, a different kind of Barcelona striker. But you know, he's bringing a lot of quality.
Yep, he plays on the left, the front three, so it means Braithwaite is down the middle. Griezmann plays off the right. I still see a need for improvement from Memphis, though. The headline pieces of action are there, plenty. Scoring goals, making goals. But I just feel he needs to protect the ball a bit more sometimes. And there's a small complaint because I recognise his talent, and I recognise it's there's still more to come. So there's no doubt he's been a fantastic signing on a free transfer, coming up with goals. But the front three, it didn't look. I mean, Barcelona. If we're going to talk about Barcelona, their performance was awful. It really was. I mean, they were struggling to deal with the left hand side of the pitch. I think Jankto and Oliveira, the left back and the left sided midfield player for Getafe, who just were dominant down that flank, which then meant that. Then we actually saw a piece of action in the cooling break. Believe it or not, those people listening in the UK, they're still having cooling breaks in Spain. Needed, much needed cooling breaks in the summer. And you could hear Koeman's complaining about the impact that left side of the pitch was having for Getafe. And he to the extent that he said, if we can't stop them, then we have to foul them. You know, don't let them keep getting down the left. So that meant then that Griezmann played effectively. I mean, I looked at on Ass at the average position, and he was the same as Emerson. So he was playing almost as they were doubling up because of the impact that Getafe were having down the left flank, which is surprising because Marc Cucurella is not there, but they were still good going down the left. Getafe were good, and you could argue probably deserved something from that game. So it was an uninspiring performance, scruffy, untidy performance from Barcelona. The only positive were the two young players coming on and the fact they got all 3 points and avoiding those mishaps that I'm talking about at this stage of the season where it's an untidy start for all clubs around Europe, and it's going to get worse in the next week or so.
Yeah,
because of the international break.
Yeah, we don't even know whether Barca's game is on, do we, when they get back from the international break? There's just 3 South American qualifiers, aren't there? So it's not just whether the players have to quarantine or whatever when they get back, but we don't, you know, how close the games are. So, yeah, literally, as we record, we don't know when that game is, do we, that Barcelona?
Yeah, that's been slightly missed in the UK, isn't it? The big furore has been about players going to certain countries having to come back and quarantine. But Brazil and Argentina, for instance, they play 3 games in that space of time, 3 qualifiers. They're playing catch-up because games have been called off. Brazil and Argentina play on the Thursday night, Friday morning, before the weekend's round of actions in La Liga and the Premier League. That's the third game. Brazil actually play Argentina in the middle of it. So that's when I talk about this impact of the players coming back late from pre-season, from different competitions, all the clubs at the top we're talking about, they have had, I mean, Barcelona have had a mishap by drawing at Athletic Club. But I actually don't think that is bad. That happens. I would say the biggest mishap probably is Real Madrid drawing at Levante. Although we know Real Madrid, Levante do cause problems. I think that is one, maybe severe. Dropping points against Elche. Atletico Madrid, Villarreal, I wouldn't call that a mishap. Villarreal are the top 5 team, probably. So that's not a mishap. But avoiding those mishaps, which these teams have done by and large, and can you continue to do so until Christmas, is, I think, really important. So a scruffy game from Barcelona, but they avoided that, mishap of dropping points against a team that, if they do drop points against, they go into that list category of, they've messed up, basically. So yeah. They got the win. But I have no idea why they're looking at another striker.
Right, let's have a look at the other games. Cadiz 2, Osasuna 3. It's not a scoreline you saw coming. And what was going on to? Why did everyone keep handballing the ball?
It was like basketball. It really was. I mean, the last one from one card, and that players are the only one I would have sympathy for would be David Garcia, because he's gone for a header at the far post. It's gone over his head, and the attacker's headed it against the back of his arm. He's not looking at the ball. I thought that was a harsh one. But the first, the two conceded by Cadiz were ridiculous. I think it was there were obvious penalties, of which they still argued about. To the extent that they really genuinely believed that they were being hard done by. They weren't. It was, I think they were both clear handballs. So it was the Cadiz are winning 2-1 in the 90th minute and lose 3-2.
Yeah.
So that shows you how dramatic that ending was. And Osasuna, I thought, were the better team. But Cadiz have a style. They baffle me, to be honest. They rely on a back four, which is supported well by the two wide attacking players. So at times you look at them, particularly when they're ahead, and it's a back six. Yet somehow, Salvi Sanchez still gets forward from that deep position to get half a dozen good crosses into the box during the game. And then, you know, Alex Fernandez has got a couple of goals in this game. They get up to join Negredo. But there's no obvious signs that they should be good on in terms of counter-attacking football. But they'll be good on set pieces. And Salvi Sanchez is a key player. Lozano tried to do it on the other side, Anthony Lozano, but not to the same effect. But Salvi Sanchez is a fantastic player for Cadiz in terms of what they try to do. So the energy to get forward, get quality into the box on four or five occasions during the one game of football means they have to be really efficient. And Alex Fernandez was one of those that the first goal, the non-penalty goal, gets forward and joins up with Negredo and just about gets in the nick of time to get on the end of one of those crosses. So I'm glad there aren't too many other teams like Cadiz in the league, but I admire a team that has a personality and a style which they stick to. So many teams don't have an identity. You don't know what they're trying to do. That's why they're poor teams. Cadiz give themselves a chance because of the way they play.
27% possession in that game owing to
Osasuna.
Yeah.
Osasuna must have thought, this doesn't happen often. We'll take this 73% possession and rely on a couple of penalties.
Now,
a fantastic header from David Garcia to win it. Great header at the far post from the corner.
Now, Rayo Vallecano, so no hint of this scoreline coming beforehand, was there? Rayo Vallecano would win a game 4-0. You're rock bottom of the league coming into this one. Now, there are only 463 fans there because the fans are protesting against the owners of the club. So it looked that, it didn't look that weird. It looked like what we've been watching in the last year or so anyway. But so what happened here? How worrying is this for Granada to lose this game?
Yeah, Robert Moreno must be hoping it's a one-off because what I saw didn't resemble anything like the Granada we've seen from the individuals. Watching Herman Sanchez back off, and allowing Tekken to score. I'm seeing Domingos Duarte giving away a silly foul for a penalty. Individuals that we expect better. So they're 3-0 down by half-time. And there was an early goal in the game. Alvaro Garcia with a goal that was deflected heavily off of Victor Diaz that looped up and went over the goalkeeper. Trejo with the penalty from the foul by Domingos Duarte. And then Teca, the goal I'm talking about, where Herman Sanchez has got his arms behind his back and he's jockeying back towards his own goal and allows Anteca four or five touches of the ball to tee himself up to strike it in the bottom corner. So that would be a concern. Now, that can be a one-off for Robert Moreno, but it would be worrying that normally reliable players were so poor at the weekend. So Rayo took full advantage. And it's good to see them, get the goals. I mean, there were a number of teams this week that were searching for their first goals of the season. They were one of them. And to see them, it was a really surprising scoreline. 3-0 at halftime, and Comesaña wrapped it up in the second half with another one. So, yeah, they look very attacking, very committed, great spirit. When they get supporters back in the stadium, hopefully, because they really do need them. They really, so whatever the supporters feel about the owners, the players and the coach need the backing and the supporters to give themselves a chance of standing in the division for another season, because that's their sole aim.
Yeah, and I think it looks like a thing that is solved. I don't think this. I think it's a dispute between some fans who were punished over a political thing. It was complicated. I don't suppose to go into it because I don't really have the benefit of the background of it. Anyway, hopefully it'll get sorted out. Hopefully they'll come to some accord.
I think they had an issue as well with the stadium as well. It's not the first time you've seen Rayo come up where they had to ask to play the first two games away because the stadium wasn't repaired, finished. I don't think they're doing a major refurbishment like the Bernabeu, but in the past they've come up to the top division. The stadium hasn't been up to the sufficient standard. Repairs have had to be made, and I think that is also the case for Rayo at the moment as well.
Right, so Sunday went well, 16 goals in four games. That's hey, we're back. Right, not so many goals the rest of the weekend, but some important games. So then we go to Mallorca, Terry, shall we? So Espanyol, you mentioned one of those clubs that still looking for a goal. But Mallorca, what a start to the season they've made.
Incredible. When you look at the top of the table, the four we expect to be there are on the 7 points, the top four from last season, and then you see Mallorca. And, you know, for them to get the points on the ball quickly, early, gives them confidence. It doesn't mean they're looking at 40 points and it's a million miles away. So they're really on schedule to you know, have a good season. And they fully deserve this win. Espanyol were poor. They've been underwhelming so far. And three games, no goals, and most of the chances have fallen to the player that they would have liked the chances to fall to, in Raúl de Tomás, who's been prolific for, you know, last couple of seasons for Espanyol in the top division, in the second division, really struggling for form at the moment. So he's, the chances have fallen his way, and he's not taken. Another glaring miss in this one, won the week before. So I think that's the obvious improvement that Espanyol need to make. But for Mallorca, it's a fantastic start to the season. Brilliant. Danny Rodriguez with a goal where they, at the time when the ball comes into the box, they've got four or five players attacking it. So they've got that commitment to go out and to try and win games of football. There is Garcia Plaza, who's the manager. We remember from Levante. I remember him from mainly. And, you know, they've got an attacking style, you know, good personality. And I think that at the moment, 7 points from the first three games, fantastic start for a newly promoted team.
Valencia, you weren't convinced about Valencia before the season.
Far from convinced.
Yeah, I know, but... without much of a change in the personnel, I mean, you know, this is probably an example of what we were saying at the beginning about. I know there's an element of fitness, because Cheryshev's never been fit, but he's fit playing. Guedes, a player who we raved about when he first came to play in Spain, having been at PSG, you know, every bit of his pedigree was there. Bordalas seems to be, you know, out of three games in, there's the asterisks against it, but seems to be just getting some potential, getting some of these guys to play to their potential.
Yeah, they have good players. When the reason I was suspect about them was I saw them at Brentford, and I didn't like the style of play. It was a mishmash between Bordalas, his Hatafe, and Ultra playing out the back, and I couldn't work out why suddenly Bordalas's team were playing balls across their own six-yard box. The goalkeeper was taking a short goal kick, and it was being passed around the six-yard box, the 18-yard box, and then when it went forward, there was no one there to really, you know, threaten. Admittedly, there was players missing, but it was more the style I was looking at and thinking. I was worried that there was going to be a clash of personalities between the players and the manager, but there hasn't been. They've battled right from day one. I mean, they've given their all. They're working really hard, but that Hugo Guillamon getting sent off in the first 30 seconds of his first game against Hatafa, and they went on to win. Now, tough game against Granada where they had to really battle. We joked about the blood spilled by both teams. And this one was dominant. First, third minute of the game, Daniel Vaz. When was the last time we see Daniel Vaz score in the six-yard box from across? So there's an element of he's given license to push forward to get into the penalty area. And Soler and Guedes, the next two scorers, fantastic footballers. They really are. And they're working so hard. Maxi Gomez is working hard. So Bordalas is certainly having an effect there. Perhaps the players just wanted some leadership, some guidance, you know, rather than, as I talked earlier about Cadiz having a style. Valencia probably didn't have a style last season under Javi Gracia. They were making do. There was, you know, people were moping about the lack of finances and the lack of new signings and the general state of the club. But Bordalas has come in and shrugged all that off. I've seen they've signed Dimitri Fauquier as well. He comes into that category of a borderless type signing, doesn't he? Athletic, you know, determined, aggressive player to play down the flank. So, no, the signs are really good. But I think, importantly, that their best players are playing really well, working really hard and having an impact. Guedes and Soler, fabulous footballers.
Yeah, wonderful.
Soler has done most of the time. But Guedes is a great finish from Soler. Guedes is... he's playing really well now.
Athletic, another probably same category, isn't it? A hugely experienced manager who we wondered would do well in Marcelino. And it's been a good start to the season, hasn't it? A 1-0 win for them away, Iñaki Williams' goal away to Celta Vigo.
Yeah, a couple of draws. So this is their first win. And it was... They worked hard. They had to work hard for it. Celta are playing some decent stuff without really looking like scoring too many goals, which is surprising. They're kind of like Espanyol with Ralph Thomas, Celta with Aspas. So you do feel that they've got to keep their faith because their form, likewise with Getafe, you know, three games in, you can look at it all different ways and you can think, well, we're playing well, the wins will come, or you start panicking, you think we haven't scored like Espanyol. It's, I think with Espanyol, three games in with no goals, it becomes a problem. A couple of games is it happens. Three becomes a worry. You start to get anxious about it. Celta likewise have only picked up the points so far. Tough game against Atletico Madrid to start with. Athletic. I thought that a draw would have been a fair result in this game. Iñaki Williams with a counter-attack goal, really. Good work from Sunset. And Iñaki Williams finished it off lovely. So it was Athletic scraped the win, but it was a really even game. I wouldn't be too concerned because of the form of Celta, but it becomes an issue when you've just got the 1 point after three games. But no need to panic yet, I would say.
So we haven't talked Sevilla yet, Terry. They dropped their first points of the season. They were behind against Elche. En-Nesyri threw himself at the ball, got a good equalising goal. Yeah, thoughts on Lopetegui's side?
Actually, my thoughts are more on Elche. Okay. They actually look to be half decent, to be honest. Mm. I think that they've got the potential there to do well this season in terms of, I thought they would be flirting with relegation, but I don't see that as the point now. I think that they only lost 1-0 against Atletico Madrid and they were took the lead against Sevilla. And it might be one that I said at the beginning of the programme, it's a mishap for Sevilla to drop points. They had chances in the second half, but it might be one where we look further down the line and go, actually, Elche are not bad. You know, they've been good this season. So I think it was clear evidence of an improved Elche. But Sevilla, it's... They were talking about the untidy goal they conceded because Koundé wasn't playing. So that's one of those issues I was talking about where it's an untidy start to the season where we're going up to the transfer deadline day. Clubs are leaving, players are not playing because the clubs think they might be sold and stuff like that. And I think that was a case of this with Sevilla. I think if Koundé plays, they probably don't lose that game.
There is the Chelsea fans are apparently en masse complained about Sevilla so much on Twitter that Sevilla's have lost their blue tick status. They? Yeah. in a kind of social media.
And this is because of what? Sevilla want the buyout clause?
Yeah. Yeah,
how dare they? it must be tough for the player. I'm presuming he wants to go to European Champions. Presuming he wants to go and probably double, treble his salary.
Yeah.
But there is a buyout clause. So normally it's quite easy. There are other cases. Cucurella has gone to Brighton, I think. Mm-hmm. Just paid the buyout clause. So if Chelsea wanted him, do what they did with Kepa. Pay the buyout clause. If there's no chance of negotiating, then look elsewhere. But this has been dragging on for a while. Sevilla probably encouraged it by mentioning the fact that probably it didn't need to be the buyout clause. But deals sometimes take longer than they should, or non-deals take longer than they should, and they drift on to the extent that Sevilla were missing an important player at the weekend where they didn't need to be missing him.
They're gambling here, Sevilla, aren't they? Should they sell?
I don't think so. No,
you think you'd hang out?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I'm really, fingers crossed, hoping they keep him because I genuinely think Sevilla can win the league this season. Yeah. And I want that extra competitor at the top to be genuine this time. And I think Sevilla should be that. So it's if their ambition is to do what I think they want to do, which is to be run a successful club that makes a profit, that competes in the Champions League, but to try and win a league title, why shouldn't you go for that? And why shouldn't you keep your best players? Yeah. And Koundé is one of those. So he's the difference. If they sell Koundé, at this stage of the transfer window, they won't win the league. If they keep Koundé, they've still got a chance of winning an historic La Liga title. So, no, I think they're they're doing the right thing to try and keep him.
Yeah, and if it's that stark, then you keep him, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, that's because that's historic, isn't it? Yeah, then when the league since the 30s, have they? I think Sevilla. Exactly. So, right, one more game. Real Sociedad 1, Levante 0.
Yeah, competitive, even. It was Baron Achea's, I think, was slight deflection on the guy, if I remember rightly, but needed win for Real Sociedad. A decent start. They had the opening game, didn't they, away to Barcelona, where they were outplayed, I think, but they almost managed a comeback late in the second half, and they got it back to 3-2. A couple of wins since then, narrow wins, but 6 points in their first three games. Decent start. Baron Achea is a player that I really do like. Another good young attacking player produced by Real Sociedad's youth system.
Right, I think we'll leave it there. That's all the games done. That's all the transfer news that we know so far. Obviously, we're recording. This is now late morning, on transfer deadline day. It's exciting, isn't it? Who knows what will happen? And we will be back, probably doing some Patreon stuff. Obviously, there's no games coming up this week because of the internationals. But we'll catch up. We'll do some other stuff and we'll see. We might be back discussing Mbappe's transfer, Terry, at some point very soon. Who knows?
And Barcelona. Yeah. 10 o'clock tonight. That 30 million they got for Emerson, they've stretched it out.
A bit more debt. Right. Anyway, yes, enjoy your football, everybody. Enjoy the international break and we'll be back with more La Liga very soon.
SpinQuest Social Casino. The presents are open and you're over the in-laws. It's a perfect time to grab your phone and play SpinQuest.com with live dealer blackjack, craps, and a ton of slots. And here's a great deal for the holiday, a $30 coin pack for $10. And if you're hearing this ad, you can play right now on SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.